The late Mary Oliver wrote a poem called Song of the Builders. It seemed fitting for this morning. On a summer morning, I sat down on a hillside to think about God, a worthy pastime. Near me, I saw a single cricket. It was moving grains of the hillside this way and that way. How great was its energy, how humble its effort. Let us hope it will always be like this, each of us going in our inexplicable ways, building the universe. The lectionary texts for this morning are perfect. I did not choose them. It's just serendipitous that they are perfect for a day like this. They express something of what must be said to us and something, perhaps, of how we feel. The Nehemiah passage sees us gathering at what is called the water gate. It's the place out of which the nourishment for life comes. It's very fitting, isn't it, that we're all here. And the passage says who we are and why we meet. This passage was written to people who'd been in exile for 50 years and were back in their land, and the land was not what it once was, and they didn't quite know what to do. And so the text says we are a people who remember and who forget. It's part of our nature, and we live in cycles of faithfulness and apostasy. We remember and we forget. And it strikes me that in this culture right now, we are at the end of a cycle which has forgotten, and we're going to begin turning around again to a cycle of faithfulness. It will look different. But people will ask the deeper questions as to who we are and to whom we belong. So a cycle of faithfulness will begin again, and it will make things better. We are also people in cycles of enslavement and freedom, exile and rescue. And some of us here sitting in the seats are in one or more of each of those categories because that's how life has turned on us these days. Some are feeling enslaved. Some are feeling free, some are in exile, and some are being rescued, and we know who we are. We are at home in our land, but always at the risk of restlessness and loss. It's a beautiful place, and we have beautiful moments here, but there's something about it all that is fleeting, and it's a satisfying place, but there's something in us that leaves us wanting more. A strange feeling. The text says what we do together demands participation against a very broad canvas. No one is excluded by age or gender or orientation or ethnicity. The thing, whatever it is, coming from the water source, belongs to us all. All who are capable of hearing and responding are to come, says the text. All who care for people who are incapable of hearing and responding are to come. This is for the enrichment of everybody. What we do together demands understanding. People were called on to listen and to respond in their deepest places to what was being said. So we are to be aware of history. How does it roll? What's happened before when we've been in positions like this? We need to be aware of contemporary issues. What's going to happen with China and with President Trump and with oil prices? What's going to happen with Brexit? What's going to happen to our healthcare? All the issues that are out there in the world, the homeless, the corruption of government, whatever it is, that's part of the spiritual mandate. We are to be aware of the vagaries of human nature, how we change, and the power of relationships, how we are moved, and the pull of dreams, oh, how we dream, and how our dreams take us places we've never been before. We encounter the source of all things, the great source, through a variety of sources. For some, it is still the holy book. A psalm or a story, something read at your mother's knee, rings a bell for you later in life and saves your spirit. Or another book, a novel your book club is reading, or a poem you came across, or something that's been made into a play, and in the darkness your soul is moved. We see it in the awakening of an experience, I never felt this way. When I entered into this place and in this moment of my life, I was transformed by something beyond myself, we say, and we've never been the same again. Or by a heart friend, someone who has loved us as we've never been loved before, and our sense of our self-perception and everything is changed. We read that which is tried and true, and we greet it in our experience with our intelligence and our imagination. And we wrestle through the weeping, says the text, good text for today, we wrestle through the weeping to the feasting. Go your way and eat fat and drink sweet wine and send portions to them for whom nothing is prepared, for this is God's day and God is our strength. Isn't that a great text, a serendipitous text for today? And then the Corinthians text is not unlike it. It reminds us of our nature. We are really living beings with the profile of icebergs. That is, one-third is conscious above the waterline, but two-thirds of who we really are and what we really feel is submerged as mystery. And I thought again that we are primarily feeling beings who think, not thinking beings who feel, and that makes a difference. We feel things first. Our whole web of relationships is based on feelings, and then we think our way through what we're going to do with them. But feelings come first. I feel the power of this place before I think about it. I feel the power of our relationships with each other over many years before I think about them, and it's going to be the feeling that is going to carry me out the doors. Paul compares our life together and our relationships as human organs and body parts. They're all interrelated as we are, they're all interdependent, and they're all connected by feelings. One pain can cripple the whole body, and one moment of joy and adrenaline can motivate the whole body in a team or a classroom or a household or an era. One speaker in pain can turn a mind, and one speaker in joy can raise a heart. One embittered soul beyond consolation brings everybody down, and one ecstatic child beyond calming raises everyone up. It is so. Lead with your good feelings, says Paul. Empower and embrace each other beyond difference and beyond argument with good feelings. And I tell you that to my dying day, I will carry the good feelings of this place with me wherever I go, as a lamp and as a strength and as an example of how life can be, and I shall hope always to live up for the good feelings you have engendered in me. Now, these remarks of mine are called Something in the Way She Moves. And you may recognize the song title, Something was the title, and it was a song written by George Harrison of the Beatles, and it was on the Abbey Road album in 1967. The opening lines go like this: Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover. Something in the way she woos me. I don't want to leave her now. You know I believe, and how. Her tower will always shine for me, and her bells will beckon, and her music will soar, and her people will smile, and her arms will save, always, because there's something in the way she moves. Something. We have shared something. We've dared something. We've braved something. We've saved something. We've held and helped something. We've dreamed something. We've left something undone, something more to do. And all the while, we are being fashioned into something more than we know. The biblical notion of Christ as the vine and we the branches and God the vine dresser is exactly the way things are unfolding in this community. We are the treasure in the field that others find and sell all to possess it. That's what's unfolding in this community of faith. And St. Luke goes even further. Wonderful texts for today. He suggests that we are Scripture being fulfilled. Could it be that lively, that immediate? We are Scripture the greatest of human imagination and writing being fulfilled in us, in our flesh and blood. Today, this scripture is being fulfilled in your hearing, says the text. A drama. We're living in a theater production, and it's taking place right here every day. Now, we dress as shepherds and angels at Christmas, and we stoop to touch the cross on Good Friday, but every day we are singers and actors and makers of a stage set and designers and directors and musicians in God's restorative drama, and the text calls us to play our parts well. We are in a drama of life every day. We embody the Great Commission, you see. The Spirit of the Lord is upon us because He's anointed us to bring good news to the poor, sent us to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And today, the scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. What a powerful text. We are scripture being fulfilled. Had you thought that before? When I walk out the door today, it's not going to be to fly to Mars on a one-way trip, never to return. Have no fear, I'm not that foolhardy or fatalistic about anything. Nor will it be to sail out to the edge of a flat earth and to fall into the abyss beyond the horizon. I'm not that pessimistic about anything. It is to leave a beloved home port in a ship fully laden, thanks to your loving affection and your leadership, and to take a course set for the open sea, and there to watch and to learn a while, and to accept new adventures, and to store treasures in the ship's hold, and then to return. I have business cards that say Minister Emeritus on them. Nobody gets them back. You've got me, and I'm yours. To return, to see the port lights in the distance, to feel the rough waters growing calm as we turn into the safety of the harbor, and to sense my heart leaping at the sight of loved ones and friends again. We will eat fat and drink sweet wine, and we will send portions of them to those for whom nothing is prepared. This is legacy and prophecy and ministry, just as it has always been. Mary Oliver writes, "Let us hope it will always be like this, each of us going on in our inexplicable ways, building the universe."